Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Tuesday, May 11th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, The Ever-Changing Narrative. We have a lot of different narratives going on at once, whether that be with respect to the markets, whether that's with respect to social issues in this country globally, or whether that might be pertaining to geopolitical events. It's always something new. Well, I have been stating here unequivocally for months because with respect to the narrative that pertains to the markets, the only narrative that matters is what central banks are doing, especially the Federal Reserve. If they continue to increase their balance sheet and throw further liquidity into the system, and so long as markets continue to buy that narrative, continue to buy that action by our central bank and others, and they continue to march higher, that's all that matters. That is the narrative. Plain and simple. That's also the narrative that matters if the markets no longer believe in these actions by the Federal Reserve and other central banks. And I believe if and when that happens, and I think it's just a matter of when that actually happens, that's going to be game, set, match, because this is the only thing that is propping up the global markets. It's propping up the bond market. It's propping up the stock market, equity markets around the globe. That is it, because the simple thought experiment that you have to go through is to simply ask yourself, if all of that money, funny money that was printed and conjured up out of thin air and thrown into the system, if that was removed, where would the bond market be? Where would interest rates be? Where would equity markets be? Bond prices would be much lower, meaning interest rates and yields would be much higher, and equity prices would be much lower. It would be part of the cleansing. It would be part of market forces coming in to do what they do best. Find equilibrium. That's what we are looking for here. But these markets are so distorted, it's not even funny. It's quite tragic, honestly. Our markets, especially our equity markets, have been turned into a casino. Markets are supposed to be very serious things, to be taken seriously, because you're putting your hard-earned money into the markets to generate wealth, to generate income, to provide for your future self and your family, so that you can live comfortably, so that you can contribute to causes that are important to you, whatever the case may be. These are very serious things. You are investing in a company when you're in the equity market. People just think you're putting $20 down on a blackjack table or rolling the dice at craps. That's not how it works, and people are anticipating and expecting those types of casino returns if you catch a hot streak. You put $20 down, you win $20. That's just not how it works in the markets. You follow the S&P 500, you get 6, 7, 8% a year. That's a decent return. It's slow and steady that wins the race. Warren Buffett, how old is he? Late 80s, early 90s, something like that. He accumulated his wealth over time because he understands mathematics. He understands compounding interest, which is something that I preach here all the time, and something that we discuss at length in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, because it is a very important concept to understand. Because this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. But people are watching other people get rich because they invested, really they speculated in some sort of crazy stock, or they invested in some sort of crazy cryptocurrency, and they got lucky at the right place at the right time. You don't see these types of movements in a well-functioning marketplace. You see these types of movements in a marketplace that has been completely turned upside down, turned into a casino, and are completely distorted. And it gives me great pause and concern, because once the day of reckoning comes, and it always does, so many people, especially young people, once again, are going to have to bear the biggest price of this. because they're chasing the bubble, they're chasing the fads, they're listening to their frat bros on social media thinking that stocks only go up, they can never go down, etc., etc., at least not for a long time. If they come down, all it is an opportunity to buy the dip. That narrative has been at play for a while, and that's another narrative that they continue to push out there. And they give credit where credit is due. It has worked. It has worked. But it's not because stocks only go up. It's because of what central banks have been doing in conjunction with federal governments, but really what central banks have been doing, because they just do not want to take the punch bowl away because they know what's going to happen. Because we've witnessed what happened when they do take the punch bowl away. Because we've been embarking and implementing this perverse, this asinine, this criminal economic policy of quantitative easing since 2009, since the great financial crisis. It was supposed to be temporary, just like they tell us that inflation is supposed to be temporary. But it's not. Quantitative easing hasn't been transitory, it hasn't been temporary. And the inflation that is already here, that is not going to be transitory or temporary either. It is going to turn into a structural problem, and it is going to persist and be with us for quite a while. And really, it's just getting started. But because of what took place in 2020, they can push out this narrative. They can continue to run with this. They perhaps can continue to get away with the argument, with the narrative that inflation is transitory because of those base effects. Everything was so low last year because of the pandemic, because of the lockdowns, that our base effects are now so low, anything that's above it year over year now is going to look bigger than what it actually is. And because those lockdowns were temporary, well, then these base effects and the inflation that it's going to look like exists is also going to be transitory. I don't buy into that. And I don't buy into that for a whole host of reasons. I don't buy into that because of the inflationary policies that have been implemented. Those are not just going to go away in a year. I mean, you have to look at the record amount of money printing that they have done. I showed you the charts and graphs. You can find it on the capitalnews.com or Capital Economics Presentations, Monetary Measures, Parts 1 and 2. You can find them on our YouTube channel as well. You see these graphs, they are vertical. They put quantitative easing during and after the GFC to shame. And there's no end in sight. Yet they want to continue with the other narrative that the economy is bouncing back. Yet we got a dismal, horrendous jobs report last Friday, 266,000 jobs created. Now, of course, those are jobs that are coming back as we reopen the economy. So these aren't really new jobs, per se. But nonetheless, with all of the other data that we have been witnessing over the past few weeks, we would have anticipated a bigger number. In fact, markets were anticipating a number close to 1 million. And some were above 1 million. Well, we weren't even close to that. And I said, well, why might this be? Because if that number was 1 million or close to 1 million, it's going to put the White House, the Treasury Department, and the Federal Reserve in an even smaller box than what they already are in. Because, well, isn't that evidence? Very convincing evidence, at least from a headline standpoint, that the U.S. economy is rebounding and it is recovering. Unemployment rate would have went down. So, Jay Powell and company at the Federal Reserve, why do you continue with quantitative easing? Everything seems perfectly fine. Now, I mean, you want to do $120 billion per month of purchasing U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. Well, why don't you lower it? If you want to continue with quantitative easing, okay, but why at that amount? At minimum, maybe make it $80 billion a month or $60 billion a month. Why has it got to be $120? That's a lot of money. And with respect to the housing market and mortgage-backed securities, during the great financial crisis, okay, you want to pull this off, you want to try this, all right, maybe we'll give you some rope. We'll give you some runway here. Let's see what happens. Prices were collapsing then. Now prices are going through the roof. Yet you continue to purchase mortgage-backed securities. Why? Well, he couldn't answer that question. But at least that basic question was asked of Jay Powell a couple weeks ago. And he couldn't answer it. His answer was going back to the genesis of it. Well, in the great financial crisis, housing prices were going down. We understand the backstory, Jay. Why do you continue to do it now? Has no answer. These people cannot even answer the most basic and simplest of questions, which to them are hardballs, not softballs, hard, tough questions. They can't do it. And also what gives him cover, at least for the time being, is the fact that these Q&A sessions are no longer in person because of the pandemic. They're via Zoom conference. So somebody could just push a button and shut them up. Oh, you got technical difficulty. Your volume's on mute. They'll just shut you off if it's a tough question. And he sits there, if you watch him, he's reading from paper as if he knows what questions are going to be asked of him to some degree. Or if he's asked this question, well, let's look at this number and let's answer this accordingly, blah, 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 blah. It's all a joke. It's all a script. Just like our demented president, Joe Biden, coming out. It's all scripted. He's all on a teleprompter. He can barely do that. This is the best we can do, ladies and gentlemen. You happy? This is what we voted for. Well, not me, but this is what we get. This is what happens. But the narrative today, and I think we're starting to get a little bit more over the target, finally, because it's just a matter of time before we get there. But with the recent sell-off in stocks, it's about inflation. Are we concerned about inflation now? Well, we should be, even though the White House, the Treasury Department, some members of Congress and the Federal Reserve tell us not to worry about it. But that's what some of the financial media is starting to pick up on. Rightly so. The question is, how far do they take it? And inflation is something that remains a debate amongst economists, financial experts, this, that, and the other. It shouldn't be, but it is. So that's the narrative that they're running with today. I was watching a little bit of Bloomberg this afternoon, and even they admitted that the old narrative, one of the most recent narratives of tech stocks selling off, as we saw an increase in the 10-year note, they said, that narrative kind of doesn't hold water anymore. Now, the NASDAQ sold off earlier today about 2%, but it completely recovered, despite the fact that the 10-year increased. So it was never something that held water as far as I'm concerned. I always dismissed it because the other argument was, well, people are getting out of those tech stocks, which are in the NASDAQ, and they're rotating into value and this, that, and the other. And then that quickly reversed. And then it quickly reversed again, and it quickly reversed again. This is the merry-go-round that they put us on. Again, this 24/7 news cycle, they need something to talk about. And they have to justify it with something. And so it's just groupthink. It's just the same people back and forth again talking about the same stuff because they're afraid to go out on a limb, most of them. They don't want to go against the grain. They don't want to go out against the herd. So they just want to stick with everything. Bye, bye, bye. Everything's great. Nothing to see here. That's not what I do. I call it out. I call it as I see it. You may agree, you may disagree, but you are always going to get honest opinion from me. Okay? And we'll see what happens. I got a pretty good track record here. I don't care if I'm standing alone or if I'm in the herd. Makes no difference to me. I'm going to stand where I think it's right to stand. It's that simple. So that's something to continue to pay attention to because we did see some sell-off today across the board on Wall Street and really global equities, which are continuing overnight, and we'll get to market performance here momentarily. But I just want you to be aware of this ever-changing narrative. I stress it all the time as to what they might talk about, but the one that you have to pay attention to is what the Federal Reserve is doing. And on Thursday, we'll get those updates to their balance sheet, which I'm sure is going to be close to a record high, or it will hit a record high, and we'll see how stocks continue to move with it. The other funny thing, listening to some of the market analysts who came on Bloomberg today, they're saying that the tech sector, the NASDAQ, is in oversold territory, which, again, is just laughable to me because we're only a couple percentage points away from making a new all-time high, and you're going to tell me that they're oversold? Get out of here. Give me a break. But that is this casino mentality. If stocks should sell off for a week, go down a few percentage points, it's like all hell broke loose. I mean, this might just be a run-of-the-mill correction, a little thing, and then we continue upward. That is quite possible. But don't give me all of this crap about being oversold or overbought here or there, especially oversold. You're only a few percentage points away from all-time highs. It just doesn't make any sense. But this is what happens when you throw trillions of dollars of funny money into the system. This is what people start talking about. They start drinking the Kool-Aid and they start believing their own BS. That's what happens, and it's extremely dangerous. Because once something switches and it goes the opposite direction, a lot of people are just simply not going to be prepared for it. Which brings me to another story that has been gaining some traction, especially on some social media channels, which I've been following. And this is with respect, if you recall, we discussed this a few weeks ago now, the Archegos Capital Management, that family office that was run and managed by Bill Huang, and how that family office kind of blew up. Massive amounts of leverage, causing several billions dollars worth of losses in major global banks. Credit Suisse lost several billion dollars. Nomura, a bank out of Japan, lost several billion dollars. However, and there were some others as well. I think Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley kind of got wind that something was amiss, and they got out before they sustained any losses or any significant losses. But why I bring this story up again is because somebody else that you may have caught wind of, if you watch the financial media a little bit, is somebody by the name of Cathie Wood. And she is a money manager, and she has a couple ETFs out there, ARK. Okay, many of you may have heard of this woman, heard of the ETF. And she has been wildly successful, if you will, from a return standpoint over the past handful of years. Now, if you look at the ETF and the holdings within the ETF, these are basically your bubble stocks. So she has been riding this wave of these bubble stocks. A lot of these stocks within this fund, I think, are the poster children for this virtual everything bubble that is going to end in economic ruin in tears. Okay, that's my opinion. Again, I could be 100% wrong, but that is what it is. So she's gained a lot of notoriety. She's more and more present on financial media. And that's what I contributed to. She rode the wave, more power to her. That's her style. It's not mine. But her fund is now selling off, and it has been selling off drastically. She's a big proponent of Tesla, this, that, or the other. But one of the reasons I bring her up and Bill Huang is because it was revealed, I believe, last week by her that Bill Huang was an initial investor, sort of giving her seed capital. So long story short, within all of this, and you can do some digging in this too, and there's really not a whole bunch out there yet, but when I've read what I've read thus far, something doesn't sound right. Something seems shady to me, okay, is basically what I'm getting at. Time will tell, obviously. But when you got somewhat of a shady figure with this Bill Huang doing what he did, blowing up his fund, causing several billions of dollars worth of damages and losses across the global spectrum, which again, to me, is a shot across the bow as to what may very well unleash itself once this market does break down. Again, whether that's system exhaustion, whether that's another fund that causes a systemic event, whether it's a geopolitical event, whatever the case may be, I think we're going to see a domino effect of other funds starting to collapse when the dam gives way. All right. So you got this shady figure with this queen of ETFs right now. All right. Queen of investing. And it's a big sell-off with Cathie Wood's ETF. Is that a coincidence that this started to go down after Bill Huang's family office started to implode as well? Is that where a lot of this money was coming from? There's even some people speculating that Elon Musk is supporting some of these things too, because again, she's a major supporter of Tesla. And Elon Musk was just on Saturday Night Live promoting Dogecoin and this, that, and the other, all this junk. Again, I think a lot of things that Elon Musk and his companies do, they on a net-net basis, they may very well prove to be beneficial to mankind. They may very well prove to be. But I think he's part hustler, too. I think he's part con man, too. And I think if the SEC and other regulatory agencies were on top of their game, I think Mr. Musk would be in a lot of trouble. But he's been able to get away with it for quite a while. So we'll see what happens there. But I think there is some shady stuff going on with this Archegos Capital, with Kathy Wood ARK's fund, her ARK fund. So just be mindful of that, because what leads up leads down. She made a name for herself by riding the wave on these names that led up. Is she going to overstay her welcome, or is she going to continue to double and triple down? Well, right now it appears that she wants to double and triple down. She wants to say that these are the stocks that you want to be in. These are the growth names. She doesn't think that oil can continue to go up because of electronic vehicles. To me, that is one of the most imbecilic, stupid comments somebody could make in her position. We are nowhere near that type of mass adoption with respect to electric vehicles that is going to put a damper on oil prices, especially with what's going on from a monetary standpoint, from a fiscal standpoint, and from a geopolitical standpoint, with all of these coups, revolutions, protests, riots, strikes, what have you. Nobody wants to pay attention to that stuff, as if it doesn't even matter. So be on the lookout for that. It's just something on the radar. I'm not saying that there is something there, but it doesn't smell right to me. Something else that doesn't necessarily smell right to me is this divorce that's been gaining some major media coverage between Bill Gates and what's going to be his ex-wife, Melinda Gates. But what caught my eye, what caught my attention, was the story about one of the reasons as to why Melinda might be calling the marriage off is because of Bill Gates' relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Now, first time I heard about this, it was kind of on some independent media, but then major outlets started to discuss this as well. So now, bells and whistles start going off. Something's up here, because Bill Gates has been basically the face of COVID-19. He's been the man that comes on in the, you know, Mr. Rogers sweaters, you know, looking very unthreatening, unassuming, and just coming on and saying, yes, I'm an expert in everything. This is what's going on with COVID-19. Here's the this, that, and the other about this vaccine and that one. And he's been the face of this thing. So to have some negative coverage now about him, not just with the divorce, that's one thing or another, but to have major media outlets talk about a relationship that existed between Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein. Of course, Jeffrey Epstein is this sex trafficker who, you know, suicided himself in a maximum prison. Okay, he knows the who's who. So bells and whistles are going off all over the place in my mind right now. Why would this be coming out? Because that story of Epstein killing himself in prison could very well be the story of the century, because of who he was connected to, who he was blackmailing. And there's no question about it that he was blackmailing some of the most powerful people on the planet. Politicians, business executives, celebrities, the who's who. You would know them, men and women both. I mean, his mansion in New York City had video cameras all throughout the house. So where is the mainstream media? Where are these investigative journalists trying to make a name for themselves? They're probably scared to death because, my God, if they can kill him in a maximum security prison, what are they going to do to me? So I can understand that, but where are they? I mean, they're supposed to be out there. So this story has been put to the side for quite a while, the Jeffrey Epstein story, and now it's somewhat back in the fold. And it's with Bill Gates? What is going on here? Something to pay attention to. So just be mindful of that. Now, we have Jeffrey Epstein's, I don't know what you call it, his lady friend, his handler, I don't know. Hopefully we find out the truth in all of this. But Ghislaine Maxwell, she was picked up by the FBI, I believe it was. She's in jail. She's still alive somehow. And we still have to deal with her court case. What bombs, what names are going to be dropped during her trial? That's a big story. That's something that needs to be paid attention to, because you're talking politicians, major executives, and to me, that could almost be a story that is used to bring down the markets. Because you're talking who's who. You're talking executives of these largest, are the largest of largest companies. You're talking politicians. You're saying, oh my God, this person did this, this one did that. Well, nobody can be trusted. What about the money? Where's all of this stuff going? And you can see how this could turn into some sort of catalyst for a market sell-off. To not blame all of the fiscal and monetary policies, but to blame these cast of characters and their illegal activity and the reputation that the reputations that are ruined because of it. If they did that, sex trafficking, having sexual relations with underage girls and maybe even boys as well, well, and they're running these massive companies or there are politicians or what have you, people are going to sell stocks. They're going to get out. I can see that happening. Nothing is beyond anything at this juncture. I told you, you thought last year was crazy. Buckle up, 2021, we're not even halfway through it yet. And we got all this insanity making its way through the system. So that's another thing to keep on your radar. I don't know how it'll unfold, obviously, but it's something that doesn't pass the smell test either. Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein. Then, of course, today we continue to have the pipeline, the Colonial Pipeline issue that is still underway that may be resolved this week. We don't know. But there are a lot of lines, especially in the southern states on the East Coast here in the U.S. Most of it is just a function of panic buying, people trying to load up because they simply don't know how long it's going to be. Can't blame them. But nonetheless, most of this is due to panic buying, some people waiting an hour, maybe even more, in some of the lines, depending on where you were. So that's something to be mindful of. It's something that could cause a big problem. We dealt with these types of shutdowns recently in Texas with the storms and the power outages there. Now we're dealing with this. It's one thing after the next, almost as if it's done on purpose to see how people respond. So we'll see what happens there. I want to get to an article, an update for the Israeli and Palestinian conflict, an update to Russia and Ukraine as well. But let's get through some market performance and then we'll get to those articles. We have U.S. job openings hitting a record high in the month of March, 8.123 million, the highest level since the series began in December of 2000. We discussed this last week. Uncle Sam is competing with small businesses particularly, and surprise, surprise, Uncle Sam is winning. People don't want to go back to work if they're getting paid just as much, if not more, to stay home and do whatever they want. This is not rocket surgery here. It's not difficult to connect these dots. It's very logical. Might be wrong. It is wrong, but it's logical. And these benefits are going to be in place for at least another 3-4 months. And who knows what happens within that time frame. Maybe Congress will come up with a way to justify giving more and extending it. So that's something to be very mindful of, because that's going to have major effects, and that's also going to cause upward pressure on prices because nobody's working. So productivity drops. Prices drop when productivity goes up. That's how it works. So this is the exact opposite, thanks to the government. No surprise. Dollar index is up currently about 0.1%, trading at 90 spot 26 on the dollar index. Bitcoin is up about 1% at $57,300 a coin. Not too much movement amongst the major currency pairs at the moment. Overnight futures trading, we have the Dow Jones down about 0.3%, the same for the S&P 500. The NASDAQ 100 also in the red, down about 0.5%. Cash trade in Japan giving back another 1.7%. A sea of red across the pond in Europe. Big losers today were the UK, the FTSE 100, giving back 2.5%. We have the Australian cash trade down about 0.8%. Bucking the trend right now are Chinese stocks up about 0.6%. And Indian stocks are also down about 0.8%. On the commodity front, we have WTI at $65.65. A barrel Brent is at $68.93. Both are currently up about 0.5%. Natural gas, $2.94. Gasoline, $2.13. Gasoline prices are going up daily as a result of this pipeline issue. Gold and silver, okay day, not terrible. Both are in the red right now. Gold, $1,833 an ounce. Silver, $27.46 an ounce. I imagine that gold and silver are sniffing out the inflation. They've been in periods of consolidation. They've been in a downward channel with respect to gold. Then it consolidated. Now it's breaking out. I think it's sniffing a rat. That rat is inflation. The Federal Reserve is not going to blink. They are going to be fine with higher rates of inflation because they're going to continue to call it transitory. And by that time, the genie's out of the bottle and ain't going back in. So gold and silver are some of the oldest markets that are still in existence. That's where I put my trust. Not in the crypto space, something that's been around for a decade, untested. Gold and silver, this ain't their first rodeo. So I look to them to see what's coming. Despite the fact that they are heavily manipulated markets, and we know this because of various deferred prosecution agreements, but still there is something to pay attention to. Because they smell rat. I know it. And when these markets give way, look out below. That's where you want to be, because that is where you are going to at least preserve some of your wealth, precious metals and commodities. Copper is up $4.83 a pound. Lumber still hanging on, $1,629 per 1,000 linear board feet. And Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is at 1.62%, so up for the day. So on to an article out of Al Jazeera. This is an update to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Death toll at 36 is Israel. Bombardment of Gaza escalates. Rocket warning siren sound in Tel Aviv as Hamas says it has launched 200 rockets on Israel in response to the strikes on a tower building in Gaza. Israeli forces struck down a 13-story building in Gaza earlier today. So this is almost a David versus Goliath situation. Israel is a very well-equipped military, very well-trained, and they can do a lot of damage, no doubt about it. As can the Palestinians. The Palestinians are armed not to that same degree, but of course proxies being supported by Syria and Iran. This can get very nasty very quickly. The Israeli military has continued its bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip early on Wednesday, targeting several areas after rockets were fired from the enclave. It is the most intense airstrikes in Gaza since the bombardment in 2014. Health authorities in Gaza said at least 36 Palestinians, including 10 children, were killed in Israeli airstrikes on the Strip since late Monday, after Hamas launched rockets from the coastal territory towards Israel. At least 250 others were injured. At least 5 people in Israel have also been killed. The rocket fire came after Hamas, which rules Gaza, issued an ultimatum demanding Israel stand down its security forces from the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied East Jerusalem after days of violence against Palestinians. Israeli police stormed the compound on Monday for a third consecutive day, firing rubber-coated steel rounds, stun grenades, and tear gas at Palestinian worshippers inside the mosque in the final days of the holy month of Ramadan. More than 700 Palestinians were hurt in Jerusalem and across the occupied West Bank in recent days. And then there's some other updates. You can find them that are more up to the minute. So this continues to escalate, which is no bueno. That's no good news. But we do not anticipate this coming to an end. Well, you know what? Let's be a little bit more optimistic. Let's hope, let's pray that this does come to at least some sort of ceasefire here very quickly. I know a lot of other nations are getting involved. They want to get involved diplomatically, try to get these two to the table to at least get some sort of ceasefire, and let's hope that that happens. Again, this is the worst conflict between Israel and Palestine since 2014. And also, since 2014, that takes us to this conflict between the Ukraine and Russia. So let's give you an update there, because we were talking about that a couple of weeks ago as well. This is out of Al Jazeera as well. Ukraine says Russia still has 100,000 troops near its borders. Russia still has about 100,000 soldiers deployed near its western border with Ukraine and in annexed Crimea, despite Moscow announcing a military pullback last month amid soaring tensions with Kiev, the head of Ukraine's state security service has said. Ivan Bakunov's comments on Tuesday echoed earlier remarks by Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, who on Monday accused Russia of having failed to fully withdraw military hardware and troops from the border areas following the two countries' standoff. Russia's military buildup took place against the backdrop of an uptick in fighting in Ukraine's conflict-stricken eastern regions of Donetsk and Luhansk, where government forces have battled Russian-backed separatist forces since the rebels seized a swath of territory there in April of 2014. As part of Moscow's maneuvers, Russian military units also conducted exercises in the Black Sea region of Crimea, which was seized from Kiev in March of 2014. Russia did not publicly declare the number of soldiers it had moved to the border areas, but the European Union's top diplomat, Joseph Borrell, in mid-April put the figure at more than 100,000, something that we discussed then. NATO and the United States, the leading member of the Transatlantic Security Alliance, meanwhile said the buildup was Russia's largest since it undertook the annexation of Crimea. Moscow defended the troop movements, saying they were part of a training exercise called in response to activity by NATO and Ukraine, which is an ally of the group, but not a formal member. After weeks of simmering tensions, it ordered a withdrawal of some troops beginning on April 23rd. But the crisis has sent Russia's relations with Kiev and its Western allies plunging to new lows, with ties also constrained over Moscow's treatment of jailed Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny and accusations of hacking and election interference. And it continues, but those are the things that continue to make my radar something that continues to be the part of the main narrative as far as I'm concerned, as far as the Capital News is concerned. And that's why I continue to bring these up, to provide these updates every once in a while, because these things have not gone away. Whether or not they're discussed on the nightly news is here or there, but these things have not gone away. And we can all hope and pray for peaceful resolutions of all of these things, but it's one nation after the next, as we discussed yesterday, nation against nation. So pay attention to the narratives that matter. And I hope I'm doing a good job here of explaining what those narratives are and why those are the ones that ultimately matter. We still got a long way to go to get through the other side of this, but I think that we will. It's going to be a rough and rocky road, but we'll get through this. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.